Welcome friends to Literature Mantra. I'm Harsh Singh and in this audio, I'll discuss the idea of tragedy as expressed in Aristotle's Poetics and some related issues. So let's first discuss the definition of tragedy as given by Aristotle. Now Aristotle defines tragedy as the imitation of an action that is serious and also having magnitude, certain magnitude and complete in itself. In language, with pleasurable accessories, each kind brought in separately in the parts of the work, in a dramatic, not in a narrative form, with incidents arousing pity and fear, wherewith to accomplish its catharsis of such emotions. So, few important things are imitation of action, that is serious, complete and having certain magnitude, that is written in language, that is dramatic, not narrative. Okay, dramatic, not narrative. Result is of, the aim is arousing emotions of pity and fear and leading to catharsis, catharsis of such emotions. There are also some important terms which you should go through. One is himarsya, or the tragic flaw in a hero of a tragedy, or let's say defect or shortcoming. That's what himarsya is. After that, peripeteia. Now peripeteia means turning point or reversal, a point where there occurs a reversal of fortune from good to bad. That is, it refers to that point, reversal of fortune. After that is denouement or denouement. Denouement means something that takes place after the climax. So it can be unraveling of a conflict, resolution of a conflict, or maybe a tragic end of a story, depending upon whether it is tragedy or not. If it is tragedy, then a catastrophe is going to happen, and that will be called denouement. After that is anagnorisis, and anagnorisis is basically a startling discovery or a revelation of true identity of people. So anagnorisis can be a recognition, startling discovery or revelation about somebody's identity or knowledge. After that is hubris, H-U-B-R-I-S, hubris. Now hubris means excessive pride or self-confidence, something which leads a person or a character to transgress humanly limits or the limits imposed by law or divinity or society, and ultimately due to hubris there will be downfall or catastrophe. Now after this there is the evolution of tragedy. Of course Aristotle's Poetics is itself something which helps in the evolution of tragedy, but along with that there is the Senecan tragedy or Senecan model of tragedy. Now what are the distinguishing features in Senecan tragedy? First thing, it is intended to be read rather than performed, so intended to be read. Then the illusion of action is evoked by words. So whatever action happens in a normal play, in Senecan drama, it is supposed to happen through words. Means the words are coined in such a way, or the phrases are written in such a way that it helps to convey action. The themes generally in Senecan plays are Hercules, Medea, Agamemnon. Agamemnon is related to the War of Troy. After that, Oedipus. Oedipus is also a theme in Senecan plays. Then other things that are generally found in Senecan plays are the theme of revenge, just as we have in Hamlet. Then the messenger figure is there who will report culmination of activity or disaster, just as we have in Macbeth. And sometimes Senecan drama is also called closet drama, means plays that are intended to be read rather than performed. Okay, closet drama. And while reading about the evolution of tragedy, you should also read something about Gorboduc. Now Gorboduc is a play by Thomas Norton and Thomas Sackville, and it is about a mythical king of Britain. It is also considered to be one of the first tragedies written in English. And sometimes the alternative title of Gorboduc is The Tragedy of Ferrex and Porrex. Now what is this tragedy or play about? There is the king named Gorboduc, who is considered to be a good man. Then he has two sons, Ferrex and Porrex. And Gorboduc, during his lifetime, gives his kingdom away to his sons, to his two sons. But on the issue of succession, as to which son will succeed the king, on that issue, these two brothers, Porrex and Ferrex, fight, and the younger brother kills the elder brother. Means Porrex kills Ferrex. But the queen of Gorboduc, whose name is Videna, she gets angry that one of her sons has been killed, and she murders her younger son, which is Porrex. So Ferrex was murdered by Porrex, and the mother Videna murders the younger son Porrex. And the common people there are so horrified after listening to all of this, after hearing about all of this, that they ultimately decide to murder Gorboduc and the queen. So entire family is killed. Ferrex, Porrex, Videna and Gorboduc, all of them are killed. So this is the brief storyline of this tragedy, Gorboduc. and which has the alternative name of Tragedy of Ferrex and Porrex. And it is considered to be the first English tragedies. And see, this is something which we generally read in history of English literature. So see how literary criticism can be related to history of English literature. Now after this, after Senecan tragedy, there is also a sub-variety, revenge tragedy and domestic tragedy. Now revenge tragedy is basically centered on the theme of revenge. Revenge for something, some imaginary or actual injury, and it often leads to fatal consequences. The ending is often tragic because someone or the other is killed. Jacobean drama is the best expression or the best example of revenge tragedy. After that, William Shakespeare's Hamlet is also a good example. But even before all of this comes Thomas Kidd's work, The Spanish Tragedy. Now, The Spanish Tragedy is considered to be the first revenge tragedy written in English, or the tragedy of blood. After that, Marlowe's The Jew of Malta, that is also regarded as a good example. So the common things that you'll find in a revenge tragedy or blood tragedy is the hero's quest for vengeance or revenge, then the appearance of a ghost as it does in Hamlet, where the murdered king's ghost comes to Hamlet to say that please avenge me, please kill the murderer. So that you'll find in revenge tragedies. Then images of graveyards, mutilation, killing, all of this can be found in revenge tragedies. Now after that comes domestic tragedy. Domestic tragedy, as the name indicates, is about middle or lower middle class life, but the tragic elements even in domestic life. So the characters are not, you know, noble characters or noble or royal characters. They are just ordinary people. But even in the lives of ordinary people, even in ordinary households, there can be tragic events. So domestic tragedy is centered on those events. And a good example of domestic tragedy can be Thomas Heywood's A Woman Killed with Kindness. Okay, A Woman Killed with Kindness by Thomas Heywood. And also Thomas Middleton's play The Changeling. The Changeling by Thomas Middleton and Rowley, because this play was written collaboratively. So these two can also be good examples of domestic tragedy. Sometimes we also come across a term, tragicomedy. See, tragicomedy is not a sub-variety of tragedy, but just it refers to a play which has elements of tragedy as well as comedy. Ultimately, it is comedy, but somewhat tragic. That's why tragicomedy. Now, another related issue to tragedy, or let's say Aristotelian theatre, is Brechtian theatre or epic theatre. Now, with regard to Brechtian theatre or epic theatre, this is something which we generally read in Marxism, in literary theory. But since in this audio, I said that I will also talk about interrelated issues, issues related to tragedy, that's why I brought this up. So with regard to Aristotelian theatre, we already know that the aim is to purge the emotions of pity and fear. But Brechtian theatre or epic theatre has a different goal or different aim. So what is the aim of epic theatre? The aim is not to allow the audience to empathize with the characters or the play, the way in Aristotelian theatre the audience is encouraged to empathize. Okay, so in Brechtian theatre or epic theatre, the attempt is to stop that empathizing or empathy with characters or the play. And the aim is to constantly remind the audience that what they are watching is something artificial, something not related to reality. And how is it achieved? Through the use of alienation effect or distancing effect. Now the distancing effect can be done through different methods. One can be showing some projection on the screen in the middle of the play. Characters, while acting, they start to lecture the audience on something totally different. Then the stage designs are such that they never look like some real place or some real home. So there are reminders to the audience that what they are watching is totally artificial and totally unrelated to reality. And epic theater is mostly associated with the dramatic theory and practice of Bertolt Brecht. Bertolt Brecht is a Marxist theoretician, but also a playwright and director. And Bertolt Brecht famously said that the essential point of epic theater is that it appeals less to the spectator's feelings than to his reason. So just remember that epic theater is something totally opposite to Aristotelian theater. Why? Because the aim is to remind the audience that what they are watching is something artificial and totally unrelated to reality. And the aim is to prevent any kind of empathy with the characters or the play.